Hello. Welcome to our program on careers. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader for Scent Sounds of Arizona. Today, I'd like to begin our program with an article which appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 23rd of May. The title of this article is College Grads Have an Edge in Tight Job Market. The article was written for the journal by Justin Lehart. Outlook is still tough, but those without a bachelor's degree climb a higher hill. It's a tough job market for young college graduates. For young people without a bachelor's degree, it's even tougher. The college class of 2026 is entering one of the most nerve-wracking job markets in recent memory. Employers have sharply reduced hiring, awful news for those trying to land their first job. Worries that artificial intelligence will be able to perform many of the skills graduates spent years learning are running high, and commencement speakers lauding the technology are drawing jeers. A widely followed quarterly report from the New York Fed, based on the detailed data that underlies the Labor Department's monthly jobs report, shows that as of March, the unemployment rate for people with bachelor's degrees and between the ages of 22 and 27 was a seasonally adjusted 5.6%. That was a big step up from the 3.6% registered in December of 2019, before the COVID pandemic. The unemployment rate for all workers in that age group, college graduates, those with associate degrees, those with just high school degrees, and so on, was higher at 7.2%. But the move higher from right before the pandemic, when it was 6.8%, was much smaller. So, in relative terms, it looks as if the employment prospects for young college graduates versus other young people have worsened significantly. But unemployment rates are a narrow measure, and using them to draw comparisons between different groups of workers can be problematic, said Brad Hirschbein, who is senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. His analysis of the same government data suggests that, if anything, the employment outlook for less educated young people has weakened more than it has for college graduates. Young people with college degrees are more likely to be employed. They are more likely to be earning money, said Hirschbein. Among young people who do not have bachelor's degrees, there is a larger share who are sitting out, meaning not even looking for work. The Labor Department does not count them in the unemployment rate. Rather, the unemployment rate includes only people actively out there looking for work. Hirschbein found that in the first quarter, the labor force participation rate, the share of the population either working or looking for work, averaged 75.9% for people whose educations span high school through associate degrees. That was down from 77.1% in the first quarter of 2019. Meanwhile, the participation rate for young people with bachelor's degrees was 86.7%, up from 85.7%. So, it looks as if the narrowing gap in the unemployment rate for young college graduates and their less educated peers has come about because the college crowd is participating more actively in the labor market, while others are moving to the sidelines. A still more comprehensive measure is looking at the share of the population that is working. For college graduates ages 22 to 27, the employment to population ratio averaged 82.4% in the first quarter, according to Hirschbein's analysis, nearly flat with its average of 82.5% in the first quarter of 2019. Meanwhile, for the group with high school through associate degrees, the employment-to-population ratio was 70.5%, down from 71.8%. So if you look at anybody who has a diploma but does not have a BA, their outcome has gotten worse over the past few years, said Guy Berger, who is a labor economist who has run similar analyses. Berger also emphasizes, however, that today's college graduates do face a difficult environment. Their employment outlook has not deteriorated as badly as it has for the less educated. But historically, they have done better in the face of a weakening job market than they are doing now. Part of the problem might be artificial intelligence, but the bigger problem could be that they are competing in a workforce where having a bachelor's degree is not nearly as special as it once was. In a recent analysis of the detailed government data, economists at the Economic Policy Institute noted that the wage boost that workers with a bachelor's degree receive relative to less educated workers, while still substantial, has slipped, falling to about 55% last year versus about 63% in 2015. That could be because the number of workers with college degrees keeps rising. As of March, about 42% of U.S. employees did have a bachelor's degree or higher versus about 36% a decade earlier. So it is a dynamic that has happened before. As Harvard University economists Claudia Golden and Lawrence Katz have documented, in the early 1900s, only a small fraction of workers had even high school degrees, and having one earned workers a substantial wage premium at that time. But that premium was eaten away as having a high school degree went from a rare to common and almost universal. The next article that I would like to read for you today is from the New York Times, the 22nd of May. The title of this article is Newsom to Explore Job Shields Against Artificial Intelligence. This article was written for the New York Times by Cecilia Kang. California's Governor Gavin Newsom issued an executive order on Thursday to explore a broad overhaul of labor policies, an attempt to front-run a potential mass job displacement being caused by artificial intelligence. Mr. Newsom, who is a Democrat, signed the order mandating state agencies to work with academics, labor groups, and the artificial intelligence industry to study just how to subsidize companies that keep employees rather than replace them with the technology. The order calls for an expansion of job training programs, particularly for white-collar workers such as customer service representatives, software developers, and marketing and salespeople, whose roles are expected to be eliminated eventually by AI. Mr. Newsom also ordered an examination of universal basic capital, which would give all residents stakes in assets like corporate stocks, bonds, or wealth funds. Unemployment insurance and other traditional safeguards will not suffice, Mr. Newsom has said. AI leaders have warned him of swift and major changes in employment, where entire job categories are now at risk of extinction, particularly for white-collar workers. California has never sat back and watched as the future happened to us, and we won't stop now, Mr. Newsom said in a news release. But we must think bigger. This moment demands that we reimagine the entire system, how we work, how we govern, how we prepare people for the future. Mr. Newsom's executive order, the first of its kind to be signed by a U.S. governor, reflects a growing global angst. Fears about artificial intelligence have prompted a fierce debate over how best to help individuals transition into new careers or help those facing extended unemployment. on Wednesday, Meta slashed its workforce by 10%, or about 8,000 people, citing a further shift in the company's strategy to AI. It joined the chip company Intel, the software company Cisco, the e-commerce giant Amazon, and other tech companies as well that have laid off thousands of workers. As executives say, the technology has created significant efficiency gains. Dario Nnode, who is co-founder of the artificial intelligence startup Anthropic, has predicted that roughly half of white-collar jobs today could disappear in the next 5 years. While other technology leaders disagree with Mr. Amoder's predictions, nearly all say that the technology is going to replace humans in fields such as communications, law, and engineering in the near future. Governments around the world are responding to AI-related job losses with an array of actions and experiments. In China, which recently has a 17% youth unemployment rate, courts have ruled in favor of workers who have sued their former employers for compensation after being displaced by AI. England, Japan, and South Korea have contemplated universal basic income, a policy giving regular cash handouts to residents to make up for labor market disruptions. In the United States, some Democratic lawmakers also have floated legislative proposals for similar pilot projects. Technology leaders including Elon Musk of Tesla and SpaceX and Sam Altman of OpenAI have said that universal basic income may be needed. Mr. Musk has said that productivity from AI will amount to a surge in funds available to governments that can be used to compensate individuals who lose their jobs to technology. Universal high income by way of checks issued by the federal government is the best way to deal with unemployment caused by AI, Mr. Musk said in a post last month. While Mr. Newsom's order directs policy exploration instead of concrete action, California has been a leading state in regulating artificial intelligence. The state was the first to pass a comprehensive safety bill on large language models like OpenAI's ChatGPT, Google's Gemini, and Anthropic's Claude. Mr. Newsom recently issued an executive order to vet any companies with artificial intelligence contracts with the state for privacy and security guardrails. California and other states as well have helped to fill a void in federal regulation in which the White House has largely urged free rein for the companies in a global AI race with China. That may change in the wake of Anthropic's powerful new model, Mythos, which has prompted White House officials to consider an executive order mandating safety testing for new models. In a speech this week at a conference held by the Center for American Progress, a left-leaning think tank advocacy organization, Mr. Newsom said that he was concerned that companies were getting tax breaks while workers were saddled with taxes on their wages. Tax breaks for companies that automate and displace employees will enrich companies but doubly hurt workers who are still subject to taxation. The governor's order does not specifically mention an overhaul of tax policy, but that could be considered as state agencies develop new AI-related labor frameworks, the governor's office has said. Mr. Newsom's executive order predicts a widening gap between AI companies and workers as the industry explodes in profitability and laborers are increasingly left behind. In his order, the governor asks state agencies to focus on ways that collective bargaining by labor groups can help to bridge the gap. Businesses are going to make a fortune, and that's why you cannot continue to have a payroll tax system that taxes jobs and then subsidizes automation, Mr. Newsom said in his speech this week. The next article that I would like to read for you today appeared in the Wall Street Journal on the 12th of May. The title of this article is "He Session: A Changing U.S. Job Market is Leaning Against Men." Justin Lehart wrote this article. The American labor market is tilting away from men. Over the past year, nearly all net job growth has come from healthcare and social assistance, a sector with a dearth of men. Sectors with heavily male workforces have been losing jobs. The post-pandemic period has seen an influx of women in their prime working years into employment. The share of men working has flatlined. A divergent path might widen in the years ahead. As the needs of an aging population stack up, occupations that men have historically been loath to enter, such as jobs as home health aides and medical assistants, will likely play a larger role in the labor market. A growing educational divide is also part of the equation here. Women earn bachelor's degrees at a substantially higher rate than men, and employment rates among people who are college educated are substantially higher than those who aren't. On Friday, the Labor Department reported the overall unemployment rate stayed steady at 4.3%. Unemployment rates for men and for women were not all that different, just as they weren't before the pandemic. But the unemployment rate includes only people actively looking for work. A broader picture of employment trends comes from looking at the share of the population that is working. Among men 16 years of age and older, the employment-to-population share was 64.1% in April. That compared with an average of 66.6% in 2019 and 70.9% back in the 1990s. A lot of that decline can be explained by an aging population. There are a lot more male retirees than there used to be. The share of women working has always been lower than men, but it has held up much better despite an aging population. Women's employment to population share was 54.5% in April, a bit below its 2019 and 1990s averages. The narrowing of the employment gap between men and women has been a decades-long process, said Harvard economist Lawrence Katz. Women's gains in participation has stalled out starting around 2000, but were reinvigorated after the pandemic, in part because hybrid work arrangements afforded more opportunities for women with children. And more recently, healthcare and social assistance, where women outnumber men 3-1, has been the bright spot in a dimming job market. The sector added 656,500 jobs over the year ended in April, the Labor Department said. Absent that gain, the private sector would have shed 145,500 private sector jobs. Among the sectors where employment has fallen over the past year are manufacturing, which has resumed its long decline after a brief post-pandemic pop, and which employs more than two men for every woman, and transportation and warehousing, which have been among the sectors most affected by tariffs, where men outnumber women 3-1. Men are clearly being affected by the tariffs and poor performance of manufacturing, said Katz. By the Labor Department's count of U.S. payrolls, the number of jobs held by women has increased by 421,000 since the end of 2024. The number of jobs held by men has slipped by 1,000. It is a figure that comes with caveats. More women had multiple jobs, for example, while more men are self-employed, meaning they have work but they aren't included in the payroll's jobs counts. Lauren Bauer, a fellow at the Brookings Institution, characterizes the job market not so much as weaker for men, so much as it is much better for women. focusing on women ages 25 to 54. The employment to population share was 75% in April, which compared with a 2019 average of 73.7%. For men, it was 86.5%, around where it was in 2019, a time when employment for those men was rising toward levels last seen before the 2008-09 financial crisis. To the extent that things are softening, though, they're softening from a very strong place, she said. Career transitions can also be harder for the less educated. A coal miner, say, might be highly skilled at using specialized machinery to cut and load coal, but that skill can't be readily applied to work outside that mine. Career transitions can also be difficult because some types of work do not fit into the identity of many men, said Katz. Consider dental hygienists. Employment growth is projected to stay strong, and the job pays well. The median annual wage was $94,260 in 2024, compared with $49,500 for all jobs. But only 5% of hygienists are men. So changes can occur if gradually. The share of nurses who are men has risen from about 2% in 1960 to about 14% today, said Elizabeth Munich, who is a health economist at the University of Louisville. In research conducted with Minneapolis Fed economist Abigail Wozniak, she has found that men tend to gravitate toward higher stakes nursing jobs, such as working in intensive care units. She has also found that they tend to enter the field after working other jobs. It didn't seem to just be about high wages that were encouraging them to go into nursing, but the general stability of the healthcare sector itself, which kind of surprised me, Munich said. And the next article appeared in a recent Wall Street Journal. This article was written by Lisa Ward, and the title is, Why Do People Tip Less on the Weekends? A study finds that when restaurant patrons spend money elsewhere, they cut back on gratuities. The wait staff in restaurants should be aware. Patrons are less generous with tips over the weekend. That is the finding of a recent study that analyzed 68 million credit card transactions at 47 restaurant chains operating in 41 states. Patrons, the study found, tipped their servers up to about 1 percentage point less on Saturdays and Sundays. The average tip for weekdays alone was 21.30%, with the highest tips on Tuesdays 21.45% and Thursdays 21.47%, but on the weekends tips fell to 20.25% and 20.44% respectively. The average for the entire week was 21%. The difference can be substantial. Servers might handle $1,000 to $2,000 worth of meals during a shift, said Chris Pantzals, who is a professor at the University of South Florida's Mena College of Business and one of the co-authors of the research paper. So a 0.75 to 1 percentage point reduction translates to $7.50 to $20 less per shift. Over this year, this compounds to hundreds or even thousands of dollars in lost income. But those findings raised a big question. Why were people stingier on Saturdays and Sundays? Church matters. For one thing, the paper says, weekends are associated with busier and rushed restaurant environments with larger volumes of customers, which means more impersonal service. But there might be also outside factors at play as well, the researchers theorized. Maybe people spent more money elsewhere on the weekends, so they cut down on tipping to make up for it. The authors tested their theory with two experiments. In one, they examined whether diners were less likely to tip after attending church on Sunday, where, in theory, they had spent money on a donation. The other study examined whether tipping rates were tied to movie going. For the first experiment, the authors combined their restaurant data set with another set that measured religious adherence in different counties across the country. The researchers divided the data set into groups ranging from counties where people were most likely to attend Sunday church services to counties where they were the least likely. The authors then focused on the most and least religious counties. In both groups, tips on Sundays were lower than tips on Mondays, but the drop was biggest for religious counties. In the most religious areas, tips on Sundays were 62/100ths of a percentage point lower than on Mondays. The drop was less pronounced, 44/100ths of a percentage point, for the least religious counties. The authors dug deeper into the data, looking at tips specifically at lunch on Sundays when churchgoers presumably had recently finished services. In religious counties, tips for Sunday lunch were almost a percentage point lower than tips for Monday lunch. But for non-religious counties, there was no statistically significant gap for tips during Sunday or Monday lunch. All of which means that weekly church donations seem to take precedence over tipping, said Pantzalis. Tips and donations seem to come out of the same mental account. All research seems to show, in short, that tips are lower on the weekend when the bulk of consumer spending happens, adding that understanding factors that affect tipping rates is essential for restaurant operators aiming to establish consistent hourly wages for their service staff. This is all we have time for on our program on careers for today. I hope you've enjoyed listening in and will enjoy the rest of your day. And thank you for listening. I'm Irene Lubin, a volunteer reader, and you're listening to Sun Sounds of Arizona.